bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't gamble. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
14 big NFL games officially in the books, Payne, and we'll have plenty to discuss on our postmortem, week one recap, preview, Monday night, whatever you want to call it, buddy. Have you finally settled down from what we saw take place yesterday?
It was a good Sunday. If every Sunday could go that way, it would be a perfect year aside from the Jaguars.
And our producer, Sam Panayotovich, first thing when we get on the line, decides, hey, how about those Jags? Deciding to throw salt in the wounds. Thankfully, though, Payne, for you and I, we don't do a college football podcast because the attitude might be a little bit more somber.
Tough day. Tough day. Tough day.
Try and put those in the rearview mirror when they do happen. And for those folks listening for the first time to our recap podcast of the week, format for this, pretty simple. We'll go through some of the teams that impressed us, some of the teams that disappointed so far through week one. We'll take a look at the current numbers, anticipating where they're going to go by the time we reconvene on Thursday, using some of the look-ahead lines to show how public perception has played a role. And more importantly, for a lot of those folks, we'll preview the two Monday night games, normally one, obviously, in greater detail. Payne, so I turn it over to you. May as well get right into it. What team, for a glass half full, really impressed you the opening week?
Well, a guy that we kind of bashed on the preseason podcast, I think the Chiefs came out with a good game plan. We know Andy Reid comes out with a good game plan, not so much in-game stuff, and we saw a little bit of that in the second half. But Alex Smith was able to get the ball down the field to Travis Kelce, over 11 yards per completion. If he can do that, it's really going to open up the offense this season. So that was one team that definitely impressed me, and specifically Alex Smith.
And something to keep in mind, Alex Smith, we know, gets a ton of criticism, especially on this podcast. And, of course, we'll talk about Kansas City's home date against Denver on Thursday in greater detail. But one of the first times in the Alex Smith era in Kansas City where they're able to win the game without a discernible run game. And that leads me to one of my weekend's biggest disappointments, the Houston Texans game plan, whether we want to talk about them offensively and what it looked like with Brian Hoyer throwing the ball all over the yard, or a team that we thought was actually going to be pretty good on the defensive side. What do we take away from the Houston Texans and the way Kansas City moved the ball pretty much at will in the first half before stagnating over the last 30?
Yeah, I mean, the Houston Texans defense was definitely disappointing. We don't know what the Texans are, and I didn't expect them to be great this year, but you compile that defense in addition to the AFC South, and you think that you might have a team that's at least competitive, but at the end of the day, when you're recycling the likes of Brian Hoyer, you're only going to be so good, and I think that's what we saw. It'll be interesting to see what they do moving forward at the quarterback position, and not to look too far ahead, but it doesn't seem to matter who their quarterback's going to be next week.
Yeah, and I think the Texans are a team, again, that we'll get into. We see a major adjustment in the betting market for their week two number against Carolina based on what it would have been had they not played Kansas City week one. Payne, I'm going to go with a team that really impressed me, and they did it in improbable comeback fashion, the San Diego Chargers. They spotted the Lions a 21-3 lead. We know there was some sharp money on San Diego, but to come through, not only to win that home opener, but to do it the way they did in covering the number. Keenan Allen, where have you been all my life? 16 catches, felt like 7,000 yards in the absence of Antonio Gates. Stevie Johnson looked like he was rejuvenated in that offense. The Chargers, one of the most impressive performances, in my opinion, especially when you dig into the box score and see how they really dominate against the Lions.
Surviving and moving on. That was my week one survivor pick, so thankfully they pulled that one out. We saw, you know, a huge move. These lines, week one lines opened, you know, 3-4 months beforehand. We saw the Chargers open as low as -1, closed around 3.5. Pretty weak first quarter, but after that, we saw an impressive second quarter and throughout the rest of the game. Second half line opened -4, closed around 6, 6.5. So sharp guys went back to the well in the second half. It was a dominating performance. I liked what I saw from them, and when we talk about potentially a team that disappointed the Denver Broncos, this Chargers team has a chance to potentially win that division.
And just to kind of give people a quick recap of what that box score looked like, the Chargers dominate time of possession, 38 minutes to roughly 22 yards, 483 to 302. They run 74 plays on offense to 47 for the Detroit Lions. The most important performance, in my opinion, though, with the Lions, I'm going to send you an Amir Abdullah jersey. It should be in the mail shortly for you, buddy.
He looked pretty good. A little concern him returning kickoffs and getting dinged up a little bit, but other than that, it was an impressive performance for him. About the lone impressive performance for the Lions, in my opinion.
Yeah, not exactly a ringing endorsement for where this team is going to be in the post-Ndamukong Suh era. But Payne, give me a team that disappointed you over the course of the weekend.
You know, I think it's my hometown Dolphins. And anytime, you know, they say you get a win in the NFL on the road, it's impressive. But to me, without overreacting, it kind of looks like the same old Dolphins. Another slow start under Philbin in the first quarter. Tannehill, to me, was just average. And we talked about this in the preseason podcast, about how consistent he looked in OTAs and camp and even preseason. But how would he look when the bullets were live? And again, just about 6.5 yards per completion. Didn't take any pressure off the running game by showing a threat of a downfield passing game. To me, it looked like a lack of chemistry on that side of the ball. And really, you know, you'd bring back just Jarvis Landry. They replaced the whole wide receiver core. Defensively, you bring in Sue to shore up that defensive line after what was just a horrible end to the season against the run. They couldn't stop anybody. And again, Redskins go for about 161 yards on the ground. And then when you talk about Morris and Jones, they combined for nearly 5 yards a carry. So that was a very disappointing effort, even though they won.
And again, we'll talk about the Dolphins, one of the bigger moves for their trip down to North Florida, or up to North Florida, I guess, in Miami's case, to take on the Jags this weekend. And I'm going to go right to the Jags for a team that disappointed. I know that we thought that this was a great spot for them, grabbing the 3.5. They were going to be able to push Carolina. Battled back late in the first half to cut it to 10-9, and then they look like the same old Jags, unable to move the football, red zone turnovers. And you don't want to overreact to the way Blake Bortles looked in his debut. I thought T.J. Yeldon was the lone bright spot. And, of course, the defense unable to get off the field against the Carolina offense that has no weapons.
I think we kind of merge the Panthers as a disappointing team and the Jaguars as a disappointing team. Neither was really impressive. We like the Jaguars, and going into this game, I simply said if Bortles does what he needs to do, not turn the ball over, move the chains, this is not only going to be a game they cover, but they win outright. We saw the Panthers. They won this game on the road with 3.9 yards per play. And you look at this Jaguars offense, they come out of the gates, they're able to move the ball a little bit. Three green zone trips, and you end up with just 3 points. You get the pick six to start the second half, and you think even though you're down at the half by one after botching the PAT, but you get that momentum score into the half, you think it'll carry over. Luke Kuechly out for the Panthers in the second half, so they missed their defensive leader. And Bortles goes and throws a pick, and basically at that point, the game's all but over.
And Carolina, with some injuries on the offensive line, a unit that already seemed poised to struggle. And I'll never cry bad beat on a teaser, but I will say it definitely hurt knowing that Jacksonville's missed extra point cost us a little teaser action plus 10.5 that we had partnered up with the Rams yesterday.
Yep, we fell to the new rules, the new kicking rules, and I think that's one thing we didn't really address in the preseason podcast, and we'd like a little larger sample size, but it seems to be working. It seems to do what the NFL wants it to do. I know throughout the course of the last decade, we had about a 99% success rate with the PAT. And then after the preseason in the week one, we're looking at about a 93% success rate. Again, pretty small sample size. We'll see how that continues moving forward.
It definitely makes sense to try and pay attention to it as we talk about key numbers throughout the course of the season. But Payne, it is a Monday morning, so enough of the depressing chatter. Let's go with another team, player, or performance that really impressed you through week one.
I was impressed with the Rams. I really was. And I know they took sharp money at plus four, but it's really the resiliency from this team. They get out fast, come back after a special team score. I mean, the Lockett, you had to prep for Lockett, and they just didn't do it early on. You take a lead 24-13 into the fourth quarter. You're driving again. Isaiah Pete fumbles. I just thought the game was done. They showed a lot of resiliency coming back in the fourth quarter, tying that up, winning it in overtime without their top two backs, with Foles in a system where he's not really used to any of his guys, a new offensive system. I just thought they showed a lot of resiliency, and I think this is probably a good sign in a lot of the sharp guys like the Rams coming into the season. But after watching them in the preseason offensively, I said, wow, this team could struggle. But hanging 34 points against Seattle's defense, regardless of who's on that side of the ball, missing Cam Chancellor or not, it was very, very impressive, very resilient performance from the Rams.
And again, a game I know some of the sharp guys were looking to play under in the first half, would have cashed that ticket at 10-10, having gone under 20.5. The key number of 21 never emerged, but a game that went flying over. And I think a trend that we're going to see all too often in the NFL as we talk about some derivative markets and potential to play first half totals more so than full games. We'll get into that in greater detail. Payne, I may as well go with two teams that will be going head-to-head with each other. Was thoroughly impressed with Tom Brady, his resiliency, the mental toughness that man shows every time he puts on his uniform is something that's mind-boggling and really should be the poster child for everybody else. And the team that they're going to play this weekend, the Buffalo Bills, building a 24-0 lead at home against the Colts. Maybe it speaks volumes about where Indy's going to be, but I know a lot of us thought Buffalo's defense was going to be a tough nut to crack. It sure looked every bit as good as that preseason adulation getting started against Indy.
Yeah, it was a perfect matchup with that Colts offensive line and their strength being the defensive line. I think it was a little bit to do with both. But for me in that game, I took away Tyrod Taylor appears to have a grasp of this offense, kept the chains moving forward, and even showed that he could throw the ball a little deep. And if they can throw the ball just a little bit deep to open some separation and not have the box clogged for the run game, their offense is going to be pretty good. And really, the offense only needs to be average with a defense like that. And that's the key. As for the Patriots, for me, they did look good. But it's Tom Brady. I don't expect anything less. I think he continues to impress even at his age. So for me, that's kind of just ABC, next in line kind of thing when it comes to Brady and Belichick.
For me, a couple quick disappointments, and we don't have to go into them in great detail. Saints red zone offense, I know you and I have talked about at great length. This is a team that may struggle to get sevens, especially playing from inside the red zone. The injury to Terrell Suggs, which will put him out for the year, really changes the dynamic of the Baltimore Ravens defense. And then, of course, the Dallas Cowboys losing Dez Bryant with a broken foot 4 to 6 weeks. And Payne, I guess I'll turn it to you. Were you more impressed by Tony Romo's performance for the Dallas Cowboys or more disappointed by Tom Coughlin's clock management in the waning stages of Sunday night's game before we kind of move on?
This is always a quick – for me, I like to be aggressive. I think you go out there, you try to score a touchdown, and you win the game and it's over. And this is why you pay Eli Manning the money you pay him. That being said, Eli Manning has to be smart enough to simply fall on the ground, take the sack, and move forward. And that's, again, why you pay Eli Manning. And I don't want to dig into Eli Manning too much, but at the end of the day, this is a guy who would be – his head would be on a spit if not for 6 inches. I mean, the defense showed up against the greatest offense of the last decade in 2 Super Bowls, held them to less than 20 points in both, and this guy just kind of has 2 Super Bowl wins, and this is why he's getting paid. I'm not an Eli Manning fan. I think he's a fraud. And this is the kinds of things that we get from Eli Manning. Does not shock me at all. This is not on Tom Coughlin. You pay a quarterback that kind of money. You say, go win me the game by scoring a touchdown. If not, fall to the ground, and he couldn't do it.
Awfully interesting. When you talk about quarterback legacies, Eli Manning seems to get a free pass for his 2 Super Bowl MVPs, and you can't take away his Lombardi trophies. But you look at a quarterback like Dan Marino, who never won the big game, and you can make the case that it's no comparison in my mind who the better NFL quarterback is. For those folks just paying attention right now, the man on the other end of the line, he of at Payne Insider fame. You can follow him on Twitter, at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there, at Todd Furman. You can find this podcast, iTunes, SoundCloud, toddstake.com. Payne, is there anything I'm forgetting where people can subscribe to this and make sure they don't miss a single minute of podcast NFL Football Gold?
I think you covered it, but I will say this. Not too many people missed last week. We set a record for the amount of listens we got in our week 1 of season 2. So thank you for all the loyal listeners out there.
Yeah, and I have to give credit to our producer, Sam, and Brett Jackson for that slick new intro. I think people just wanted to hear what that hot soundtrack sounded like, tuning off probably about a minute and a half into hearing our annoying voices.
Yeah, I probably played it about 25 times, and I don't even think I listened to the rest of the podcast.
It's all about blacking out and not knowing exactly what you said. But, Payne, of course, the big thing after week 1, everybody wants to overreact, not just the fans, but odds makers. And what we see when we typically look at the Westgate Superbooks, look ahead lines, we're already seeing a massive change for Thursday night's game. Kansas City was listed at a pick against the Denver Broncos. That number now out to 3 at our parent sponsor, Bet Online. Total in this game has seen some major movement as well. 46 as high as the opener in some spots, now down to 42. Are we overreacting? Are we underreacting to what we saw from those two teams in Week 1?
Maybe a little bit. Not to tip the hand for the Thursday pod, but at this price, I mean, the numbers are a little gone, but, you know, Kansas City certainly the side that is a sharp position at low limits, and they were willing to take those low limits and get the best of the number and not worry about the rest. So I think all those moves, total and side, are absolutely warranted.
And like you said, we will definitely get into that game in greater detail on Thursday, so make sure you folks are listening like you should be each and every week to get the most up-to-date information headed into the weekend. And Payne, we may as well bounce around some of these games and do it in a pretty quick fashion. Don't want to get people bogged down too much. Carolina and Houston. Carolina was listed as a 2-point favorite on the Westgate's look-ahead number. Right now, based on Week 1 performances, we're seeing Carolina a 3-point favorite at Bet Online. Total here, 40.5. As you said, they didn't exactly look like an offensive juggernaut moving the football in their debut.
Nope, 3.9 yards per play. Houston without a starting quarterback, and they have still taken some money. Opened as high as 4. 3.5 was about the consensus, and now we're looking at about 3. Still some hooks out there if you do your shopping. And I think Houston will be the side to look at as we look at these games on Monday.
Bucks Saints, we didn't talk about the performance and debut of Jameis Winston or Marcus Mariota, who I think deserves full marks for his effort. Friend of the program, Clay Travis, though you follow his timeline, he's already ready to send Marcus to Canton. You look at New Orleans, they were slated to be a 7-point favorite in this game. New Orleans doesn't look good in the red zone. All of a sudden, that price balloons out to 10. Buying the hype or selling the Bucks given their Week 1 performance?
Obviously a tough place to play, but the Bucks have shown that they've been pretty competitive in the dome, and I think it's a large overreaction here. If you can't score touchdowns, you're not going to cover double-digit spreads like this. We've talked about Breeze moving forward, the arm strength weakening. He's very short. He doesn't have the big red zone target that we've seen in past years. So we've seen 10.5 get scooped a little bit. Some books now have gone to single digits. And I think, you know, just too many points for a division game.
Patriots-Bills, this game was slated to be New England, about a 2.5-point favorite. Bet Online now sits this game at pick, total of 45. Of course, no major movement across key numbers. But I'll make the claim, Payne, that even with Buffalo's impressive effort, we're going to see the public backing New England, knowing how they've dominated these divisional road games in the past.
I think this is kind of a rule of thumb, is to not look too far ahead. I kind of left Buffalo off the card, even though I liked them a little bit, trying to position myself for this week, and that got some pancake on the face there.
We were able to at least get the first half under, though, so it wasn't a complete and total bust.
No. Wasn't the number I was looking for here, but I think Buffalo still presents some value when you talk about New England. We talked about it last week. Make sure, find out if Brian Stork is going to play at center. And New England still has some question marks with some guys going down on the offensive line. And again, we know where Buffalo feasts defensively. It'll be interesting to see if New England can come up with a game plan for Tyrod Taylor. And I think this under move made a little bit of sense. So I want to look at this game a little bit further, look at the Buffalo game a little more in depth. I'll watch it on replay again tonight and see where we can go from there. But nothing too crazy stands out to me at this point with the lines in total.
Tennessee-Cleveland, this game looked like the Browns would have been a 4-point favorite before Week 1. We still don't know who's going to be at quarterback for the Browns. I have to imagine your mindset, much like mine, we'd rather have McCown out there laying 2. Can Tennessee win their second road game in as many weeks with the hype machine? This is one of those dreaded public dogs, in my opinion. I think everybody is going to be slurping the Titans, given what they saw in Week 1.
Well, the first thing we talked about in the preseason podcast was this is a Tennessee team that we were going to be looking to back. We did it in Week 1. Now we might see kind of that hype machine here. Opened as high as 4. We're now looking at 2. Is a safe number to say, is a consensus. For me, I have to figure out who's going to play a quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. I want nothing to do with Johnny Manziel. And
apparently we have apparently we have a live dog in this game. Live dog.
What is interesting for me is I thought I would never be clamoring for McCown, saying we need McCown here. I never envisioned myself saying that in my lifetime, but we need McCown here if I'm going to play Cleveland. And I think the spot, the situation definitely presents itself towards Cleveland. Clearly a number grab for Tennessee, knowing where the market would head after the week one performances. And then you figure out what you're going to do with that Tennessee plus four ticket later, especially when you're talking about going through the key number of three. But I think if McCown is the guy, we'll see some Cleveland money eventually hit the market here.
And I think it's important to note, too, the more film that's out there on these rookie quarterbacks, no matter how good they're going to be in the first season, it's the advantage defense. Tennessee seemed to really benefit from Tampa Bay just being unprepared for what Marcus Mariota was going to bring to the table. Jameis seemed to be in over his head there. I think it was a combination of a perfect storm there. I'm not ready to anoint Tennessee the next great thing. We remember last year they went on the road, beat Kansas City week one, and that was kind of where their season peaked. St. Louis, Washington, the Rams headed north of a field goal favorite. We know how teams have historically struggled, especially after beating the Seahawks. Now St. Louis, change of surface, goes on the road against the Redskins team. But we can say what we want. Either the Redskins looked a little bit better defensively, Miami struggled. But what do we make of this opening number here? We're BetOnline's current price, St. Louis, 3-point favorite. You have to lay $1.25, total 42.
Yeah, would have liked a hook here, and we'll see if it eventually gets there. I was pretty impressed with Washington's defense. They brought in a lot of guys. They bring in a GM that's very analytical. So the guys he went out and got, I was very impressed with those acquisitions. So the defense definitely improved. There's no doubt about that. The question mark here is Kirk Cousins. As much as we love the backup quarterback in the NFL, this guy's just 2-10 as a starter. If you can game plan for him a little bit, he's not that great. And then the big question mark is DeSean Jackson. And when DeSean Jackson went out of that game, we saw the run game take a little bit of a hit. You can clog more guys in the box. And we talk about this all the time, about the Mike Wallaces and the DeSean Jacksons of the world. We might not love them. They might be a one-trick pony. But at the end of the day, you have to have safety help there. And that means one less guy clogging the box in the run game. And without him in there, it could be a tough sledding to get that ground game going.
And keep in mind, these two teams did meet last year, one of Washington's many low points of the season. I dropped that one 24-0 to St. Louis. So I have to imagine they'd want to eliminate that bad taste in their mouth. Bunch of these games still currently off the board at BetOnline. So we'll get to them in greater detail on Thursday. But of course, Payne, we wouldn't be doing our listeners any justice if we neglected to avoid the big Sunday night rematch, Green Bay. A 3-point favorite again. You have to lay $1.25 here. The total 48.5 appears to be ticking up to 49. Your current number, but you would have only had the Packers at -3 even had Seattle looked a little bit better. What do we make of this rematch of last year's NFC Championship?
You do have the revenge angle here, obviously. It's a tough place to play, but it's early in the season, so I don't think the weather is obviously a factor. I think you have to look towards Seattle here. I really do. Green Bay without a lot of its weapons now. I know they kind of maneuvered around the field, I should say. The offense didn't look great, but Rodgers found that connection with veteran James Jones. And I like the Bears a little bit this year from a point spread perspective. We'll probably be on them a bunch, but not a huge threat. And I think this Seattle team poses a big threat to Green Bay. So not that we want to give out stuff this early in the week, but I think the hooks will be gone, so if you can get a hook on this game, you probably have to look Seattle.
Definitely makes sense. And Payne, of course, before we get into the two Monday night games, which we'll go into in greater detail, especially given a lot of the movement we've seen on the late game, just got a direct message from our friend at BetOnline, Dave Mason, shot him a note early this morning asking him how the weekend went. He came back with a one-word response for the books, flat-out bad. And hard to argue with that result.
Isn't that three words? That's three words. Flat out bad is three words.
Well, no, he just said bad, Sam. I mean, it just says bad in my DM, and I'm not going to screenshot it, but just says bad right there, not flat out bad. I was trying to really drive home my point.
Flat out bad.
One word.
One word. Flat out bad. It's interesting that you guys are shooting each other DMs. Is there anything weird going on there that the listeners need to know about?
No, it's not that kind of relationship. We haven't gotten there after week one. It's more of a feeling out and a courtship process we're going through at this current juncture.
Okay. Moving forward rapidly,
And when you talk about that, the week one results, as we know, some of the bigger public sides, Miami got there as a 3.5-4 point favorite despite some sharp resistance. We know some of the sharp guys came in on the Chicago Bears, got a little egg on their face, taking +7. Although you can make the case if Jay Cutler doesn't throw that pick, the Bears were 100% the right side. And some of the other decisions not quite working out the way they went, especially with all those overs coming in, highlighted by those late heroics from Tony Romo, putting books in a very bad spot with everybody cashing over tickets 52.5 or less in the Sunday nighter.
There's a couple 53s out there that I know the sharp guys did grab a touch of it, so they ended up getting the push, but that's a tough one to take. I know a couple of our friends were on the over in that one. Can't say it was the right side, but hey, cash the ticket nonetheless. And I think when we look at a lot of these Cowboy totals, and we know they're going to be set very, very high, but I think that their offense, how they kind of operated on that first drive is what they're going to look to do. They're going to look to protect that defense. It was a 10-minute drive. And if you can somehow get stops and hold them to field goals, and you get a turnover here and there, it's going to be very, very tough going over Cowboys totals this year.
One last thing before we get into the Monday night games. I know we don't like to run too long on Mondays. Dez Bryant's injury, how much does that change what you think the Cowboys are going to look to do on offense?
I think it's a huge hurt. I really do. I think they're going to need Terrence Williams to step up. They're going to need him to be that go-to guy. They're going to need him to be the man and create some space for the ground game. It'll be interesting to see with Michael kind of in the background, if he's more of that power back they're going to go to. But it's a huge loss.
It's going to be interesting to see, knowing that Dallas has a massive divisional game next week against these Philadelphia Eagles, who start their season off tonight down in Atlanta, a 3-point favorite right now, total of 55 at BetOnline. Payne, where do we begin to go handicapping the Philadelphia offensive juggernaut that we're seeing against the new look Atlanta Falcons?
I think in general, when we're talking about these Monday night games, I know it's kind of cliche when we talk about professional bettors, not really buying teams, but buying numbers. And because it's so cliche, we've had some resistance from people with that phrase. But I can tell you right now, we're going to talk about these two games and these four teams. Professional bettors have bets on every single team going tonight at specific numbers. So we saw Philadelphia get some love at Pick'em early. Now at 3, it'll be interesting to see how far the public drives out the Eagles tonight. But there will be some sharp money on the Falcons, whether it's at 3 or even 3.5. God forbid it gets that high. But one thing we need to focus on with Philadelphia was great preseason, but the way they run their system and the guys they're running it against that aren't in the NFL or guys that are completely in shape, you know, week one of the preseason, that up-tempo system can definitely hurt you. And we talk about their array of quarterbacks. Now, they might not have a A-plus go-to guy, but when you talk about, you know, starting Tim Tebow as your fourth quarterback or a Matt Barkley as your third quarterback, that's better depth than the rest of the NFL has. So I think an overvalued perspective from Philadelphia in this game, and I think you'll see some professional bettors waiting this one out and looking at the Falcons late.
Wait, that means you're calling the Atlanta Falcons an NFL-caliber defense? At least that was the insinuation I got from that nice little diatribe on your end.
Well, I think you draft guys on that side of the ball, and I'm a huge fan of scheme fits. Well, we talked about the Titans bringing in Dick LeBeau. They might not have all the weapons. They might not be elite, but they are going to show drastic improvement on that side of the ball, and I think that's what we'll see from Atlanta here. I think their offense is good enough as well to kind of keep up to snub with that Philadelphia offense.
And I won't claim to be a massive trend guy, but for those folks who are, some interesting notes on that game. The Falcons 6-0 against the spread in week one at home since 1999. They did beat these same Eagles week one as home underdogs back in 2005. Atlanta also 9-2 against the spread overall the last 11 games as an underdog in week one. Philadelphia has had a knack for going over the total in Monday night games, 9-1-1 in that department in their last 11. And I guess probably the more interesting game of the night as far as line movement is concerned, we've talked about this at great length. Minnesota, a 3.5-4 point favorite way back in April where this number opened. You're now looking at this game seeing Minnesota, a 2-point favorite at BetOnline, total listed at 41.5. How do you begin to go about handicapping this one, knowing that there's been a 6-point move already to hit the market?
And more than that, some places. We saw this as high as Minnesota -5. We did see some resistance when San Francisco did get to 3 at some shops. And I think when you look at this current number, you know, San Francisco probably presents some value at this current number. For me, more so just looking at a number grab, a middle for what I have already on the Minnesota Vikings. In perspective, we know the Minnesota Vikings got love in the offseason. Opened a win total as low as 6.5 some places, out as high as 8. The opposite can be said for San Francisco. We know about all their offseason woes, from retirements to suspensions. And that was really just getting out ahead of the market. When you cap the game at its current price, there are going to be sharp guys on San Francisco at its current price.
And I think it makes a lot of sense. Everyone talks all the time about liking particular teams in certain spots, but you have to know you're price sensitive. You have to know your buy point and where you're looking to try and get down on these particular games. The handicap, and we can't emphasize this enough, we will during the course of the 17-week regular season and throughout the playoffs. Handicapping this game, Minnesota as a 3.5, 4-point dog, a very different handicap than right now where it currently sits in Minnesota as a 2-point favorite.
Absolutely. There's no question about that. And when you kind of talk about this in perspective of the game matchup, Teddy Bridgewater, everybody likes what he brings. You bring in Mike Wallace. We know Bridgewater throws a great deep ball, so that could be great. And we talked about Adrian Peterson potentially for the first time in 5, 6, 7, 8 years. He's going to be able to run on a defense that doesn't have 9 and 10 guys in the box because of Mike Wallace. So that, for me, will be something very interesting to see. Do have some injuries along the front line with Loadhole out and now an issue at center. But San Francisco, let's see what they bring defensively. That'll be the question mark for me. Let's see what they do with Kaepernick. From what I've been told, they're going to go back to the old way of Kaepernick, letting him move around with his feet, a lot of dump-offs to the backs. They aren't going to make him a pocket passer this year like they did last. So that'll be an interesting thing for me to watch. I really want to watch this game. It's one of the more interesting games of the week, and I can't wait to watch it.
And a couple of trend nuggets here. The 49ers have been an ATM machine, going 9-1 against the spread on Monday Night Football. I know since 2008, a lot of people talk about playing a game on the West Coast and some of those body clocks. I'm not really sure what you want to attribute that to or not. But the 49ers recently, an 0-5 against the spread slide in their last 5 games at home. A little bit of a different role, though. This will be the first time that the 49ers are a regular season home underdog, going all the way back to September 18th, 2011. So, oh, the times they are a-changing. Payne, week one almost in the books. Any final thoughts before we let these listeners go about their merry way and start their week on a Monday afternoon?
I think moving forward, for the listeners' sake, we're going to have a lot more information. And this isn't, you know, a podcast where we're going to cover every single game and give out picks on every single game, but we are going to give out a little more in-depth information and a few more picks moving forward. This was just week one. These lines have been out for 3-4 months. They've moved so much that you really don't want to give anybody, you know, advice on something that doesn't have value anymore. So I think that'll be the key nugget moving forward for us.
And for late breaking news, as always, make sure you're following Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. You can check out his website as well. Some great free line tracking software allowing you to make sure you get the best of the number each and every time. For myself, Todd Furman, follow me on Twitter as well at Todd Furman. Podcast, many homes, iTunes, SoundCloud, toddstake.com. And make sure you check back in with us on Thursday. Best of luck with these two Monday night games, and hopefully we'll see you at the window on Bet the Board.
I can still hear those silver trumpets blowing, and all those little honky-tonk joints, they were filled with people glowing while the cats were blowing.